This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Well, hi, everybody. I am here with Linda Richman. Linda Richman, how are you, Linda?
I'm great. I'm very excited being here.
You look really good.
No work yet.
What do you mean?
No facelift.
I don't believe you. You had a facelift at like 40, didn't you? Or something ridiculously
yes.
young,
yes.
right?
Yes, before the damage came in.
Exactly. When you were looking perfect, that's when you decided you needed a facelift.
That's when you go.
Tell the people how old you are, Linda.
I will be 83 next month. I don't even know what month anymore.
Yeah, but you're going to be 83.
Yep.
Can you believe that?
No, I can't believe it. I'm shocked by it. I wish I had some advice for people who are turning into their 80s, and there is no advice. You just cry.
Yeah, you fought it hard. You did not like your 80th birthday. We were there for a big party.
I hated my party.
You hated the party, yeah.
Yeah.
Why? Because you're not a party person.
I love fun, but I didn't want to be
the center
people
of
saying,
it, yes.
She's 80, how wonderful.
Right, right.
And now I'm turning 83.
Right.
And I'm praying my daughter doesn't make me anything.
No, I'm sure she'll do something.
A light, you know, chicken dinner.
Linda's daughter is one of my closest friends, Robin Roseanne, and we kind of met through her.
And we did meet through her.
Yeah. I met Robin on a plane going to New York, and I was about to adopt a baby. And I said to Robin, oh, where do you live? And was right close to where I lived. And I said, next week I'm getting a baby. And over you came, and you never left.
Well, it's not my memory of the story.
Tell the story.
The story is Robin met you on a plane.
Yes.
And I really never heard of you.
Right.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And I lived across town from you in New York.
In New York, yes.
And by this time I knew, you know, who you were, but I never saw a movie or anything.
Right, right.
And you had asked Robin, do you think your mother would babysit for me? Because I don't have a nanny yet.
Right, because I was just starting my show. And I had Parker, who was in diapers and hadn't yet walked. He was still crawling.
He was 3 months old.
Yeah, he was a tiny little thing. And I didn't know who I could ask to come babysit. So I said to Robin, would your mother ever want to just hang out here at night? The baby will be asleep and I just have to go. I think it was the Emmys. Was it the Emmys?
I don't remember the occasion.
Yeah, yeah. But you came over and you did it.
I did it and he was like a piece of gold. Mm. He never cried.
This is Parker, who's now 28.
I know.
Right.
And he was a doll and it was lovely. And I remember this, you won't remember, but it tickled the hell out of me. You asked how much I charged.
Oh.
I own my own business. I was self-supporting, and I said, I don't charge anything. So the next day, one day later, I get a phone call from Rosie. Do you think that you could help me out? I still don't have a nanny.
Right.
Would you watch him another night? And I said, sure, when? She said, tonight. Mm-hmm. And I said, fine. And he was fussy. That I remember. He was fussy. But I had two children. I knew what to do.
Sure.
And I went into his room, and he had a couch in his room.
Right.
And I sat on the couch until he, and I talked to him until he fell asleep, because a lot of people get bored when I keep talking. And he went to sleep, and I don't remember ever leaving your house for the next
two and a half years. Linda literally moved in to my house on Broadway and 65th Street. And we lived there for about 2.5 years. Then you helped me with him, and you were the grandmother that he didn't have. And it's a beautiful, beautiful relationship.
He's still in my heart. I mean, when he comes out here and I see him, for those of you who aren't Jewish, I kvel, which means I burst with pride.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I had a part in bringing up this child.
You totally did.
Well, Rosie moved again, but she moved to a fancy schmance house, the Helen Hayes estate.
Yes.
But of course, she never tells you what she's going to do. She just does it. You wake up in another place.
Yeah, I wake up and go, I have an idea. Let's go. Yeah. But when I met you, wasn't it how long after your son Jordan had died in a car accident? Was it shortly after or?
No.
It was years?
He died when he was 29.
Mm.
So, which made me do the math, somebody.
Yeah. I don't know.
He was born when I was 20.
Right.
So I had to be in my 30s, maybe early 40s.
Right.
And, you know, a baby meant nothing in terms of, can I care for this baby?
Right, everyone
did. I fell in love with him.
Of course.
You know, but Rosie had this habit of not telling me what company she was getting.
Well, I never thought I had to say, oh, so-and-so star is coming. I would just invite my friends over. And then afterwards, you would be like, why didn't you tell me it was Katie Couric? You know?
Or the best one was Madonna.
That's right.
Because she was at the height of her career.
Yes.
And she gets out of a limo. And I said to myself, that looks like Madonna. And she gets out with her nanny. And I went, oh, God, that is Madonna. Mm,
yes.
And I remember sitting and having lunch at Rosie's, and Madonna was just Madonna.
Now, but you had been around famous people because
yes.
Robin was at one time married to Mike Myers, who
yes.
created Linda Richman Coffee Talk,
yep.
which is based on you.
Totally.
And your love for Barbara Streisand.
Totally.
Which is how you and I connected initially.
Yes.
Right? I think we are the two biggest fans in the world.
Yeah. And I think she knows it.
Yeah, she does. And I never miss her birthday. I never miss an event. Let's talk the book. What do you think of that book?
It was boring and brilliant.
Boring.
It was boring and brilliant. Because
now, do you think it was boring to you because we know everything?
Yes.
I think people who aren't as avid fans, right? They maybe heard stories they didn't know of, but you and I kind of, we knew a lot of things that were in there.
Like we knew more than Barbara, I think.
I don't know, that might scare her. Let's not say that. But yeah, no, we knew a lot of the story of her life because, you know, it was really the whole reason I became a performer was because of her.
Well, I didn't become a performer. I just became a crazy fan. I remember hearing a story from her that she had a contentious relationship with her mother.
Mm, yes.
And you didn't have a mother.
Correct.
And I had a contentious relationship with my mother.
And you didn't have a father.
My father had died. My father was killed in a car crash. It runs in the family.
Obviously.
And no one told me he was dead until I was a late teenager.
So for over a decade.
Yeah.
No one mentioned his name?
No, and I wasn't allowed to ask about
him. And how
old
were you when he died?
Eight.
You were eight, and until you were like in college or and senior in high school, nobody really even. And
never
what did
mentioned.
You imagine, Linda? What did you think happened?
I thought, well, I had a, as I said, I had a difficult relationship with my mother. Mm. So I figured he left her.
Oh.
And he met somebody else who was fun and frolicky, and he was off having a great time. So even though I was confused,
yeah,
I was happy for him.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And I never told a soul what was going on in my head.
Yeah.
So nobody ever spoke of him.
Now, what happened to me a couple times after my mom died is somebody would call, like, solicitors, you know, which at the time, when they knew it was a kid, they'd say, is your mommy home? And I remember having such panic. And I said, she's in the shower. And I hung up because I couldn't get myself to say that she had died. It wasn't until I was a college freshman that my roommate said to me, how come you never talk about your mother? And I was like, I guess it's now or never, you know? And I said, oh, my mother died when I was 10. And it was the first time I ever told anyone that.
Well, I never said that he was dead. Because I didn't know.
Right.
I didn't know. But that also bonded me with Barbara. Because her father died. I think she was 6 months old or something
like
that.
Yeah, she was an infant, yeah.
And when I met her, I said, you know, I told her I was the most disgusting person in the world. I said, I'm the biggest fan. And I had been invited to her concert in Vegas.
Right.
And she only wanted to speak to me, which I loved. And we sat and we talked. We talked about my father. Mm-hmm. We talked about my mother was not a mother.
Right.
And her mother.
She had a lot of mental illness.
My mother had a lot of mental illness.
Yes.
Barbara's mother was just mean to her.
Yeah. It seems
she
as though she
jealous.
Was so unsupportive. I mean, so maybe jealous of her talent. Yeah.
Well, I spoke to the mother.
Really?
Yeah. At the event. I figured, you know, this is the woman who created my idol.
Right, mine too.
And I walked over to her. I said, hello, I'm Linda. I didn't even use my last name. I didn't want her to think I was a jerk, but I was being jerky.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, you have created a masterpiece. And she said, did you ever hear me sing?
No, she didn't.
God is my witness. That's what she said.
Where on earth would you have heard her mother sing? I mean, how could she ask that? Where would you have heard her sing?
In shul.
Oh, gosh. Come on now. I mean, she wasn't known to have a singing voice,
not
right?
Not at all. Not at all. And I said, I'm sad that I never got a chance to hear you sing, but I'm sure you have a beautiful voice.
But it told you all you needed to know.
That's all I needed to know.
Right.
And then Barbara and I bonded. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell her what her mother said.
Of course.
Because that would have been cruel.
Right.
But we talked about our family and our parents, and we talked a lot about fathers because I lost mine, she lost hers. And I remember having this conversation that she brought up, and she said something about her father, and I said that I didn't even know my father was dead.
Yeah.
I said he was buried at a place called, and I don't even remember the name of the place now. She goes, that's where my father is.
Wow.
And I said to her, I go there like once a month. Do you want me to visit your father? She said, yes. And I said something that I'll never regret, but I said it. I said, it would be my pleasure.
The things that come out of your mouth. But how long did it take you to go like, I am talking to Barbara Streisand? Like for me to this day still, it's still echoes in my head when I'm anywhere near her. That is her. People sometimes say, how often do you see Barbara Streisand? I'm like, never.
Never.
Never. I send her flowers on April 24th, you know?
But you went to her house.
Yes, to interview her. I went to her house a couple times.
I was jealous.
I remember that. I remember. But
I don't keep that a secret.
Yeah. Well, was there anyone besides Barbara for you? Was it always and only her? Like, you know, what was she the guiding light, the North Star?
She was it. When I was growing up, like teenage years, I became became a dancer, a Latin American dancer up in the Catskill Mountains.
Okay.
So I met Buddy Hackett and Sid Caesar and people. And I thought, I have the life, boy. It don't get better than this. Robert Goulet.
Oh, my God.
The show.
Robert Goulet.
Robert Goulet stopped his show to talk to me. He said, are you okay? And I went, no. He said, would you like me to come down to, you know, into the audience and say hello to you? And I went, yes. And he came down, kissed me on the cheek, and I thought, nothing is ever going to be the same for me.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird, the role that entertainers played in your life and played in my life, too. It was like a ladder up out of the darkness. You climb and climb and climb. Every time, like, I heard Streisand or saw a movie or a record came out, it was like a new burst of endorphins for me, you know? Anything she does still totally fascinates and interests me, you know?
Well, you know, I was agoraphobic.
I do know that for many, many years.
Many, many years, which meant I stayed home. I never left my house.
Ever.
Ever.
And you also stayed in your bedroom mostly, right?
I stayed in my bedroom, and I had the TV on, and if she was going to be on, I was there. But I also had a record player, and I had people running errands for me to get me albums of her.
Right.
And I could listen to her all day. And in my mind, I swear to anyone who's listening to this, I am normal. And I have like 5 therapists who agree.
They all said you're normal?
They all said I'm normal.
Well, remind me to give those names because I'm not going there. No. You normal in terms of your love for her or normal in terms?
My love for her was unimaginable.
Yes.
You know, I'd be depressed and then I'd put on a record.
Yep.
You heard the word record. Nothing old. Tells you how old I am. And I would just be elated. And I would just go from depression to happiness.
Yeah.
And then I would pretend, but I knew I was crazy when I did this.
Yeah.
I would pretend that Barbara and I had lunch together.
Well, I did that all the time.
Oh, good.
That's not crazy.
God.
Are you kidding me?
No wonder why we get along.
No, I would sit on my bathroom and I would pop my little pimples and I would talk to Barbara Streisand and Johnny Carson like I was the next guest.
Oh,
you know, okay. So I'd turn and I'd say, yes, Barbara. So, Johnny, like that was my fantasy, my delusion, I talked to her a lot, you know?
I spent years doing that,
yeah.
Talking to Barbara. And I'm telling you, when I met her, I thought I died and went to heaven.
Right.
And she looked different in the sense that she was prettier than anybody I'd ever seen
in my
life.
No, I think she's the most gorgeous woman that I've ever seen in my life.
Yay!
Her in What's Up, Doc?
Gorgeous.
Oh, my God.
Gorgeous.
Right? Hello, Daddy.
Hello.
Right? She takes that off at the end. Hello, Daddy. Yeah, there's nothing that I have no negative thing to say about her. Even knowing her, being around her, people say, and she said to me, don't meet your idols. I'll never be able to live up to what you have in your head. But you know what? She lived up to and beyond my wildest dreams of her, right?
Well, she did something for me that amazed me. My son also loved her.
Right.
My whole house loved her.
Sure. But you were always playing it in your bedroom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She asked me if I wanted a picture with her. I would never ask her for anything. And I said, yes, I would. And she took this picture. And the next day she came back. And in a frame was a picture of me and Barbara. And she wrote something about my son. She said, I hope Jordan's happy where he is. And I looked at her and I said, how do you do it?
Yeah.
She said, what did I do? I said, you did a mitzvah. Right. For those of you listening, that means
a good deed.
A good deed. And I thought that was the kindest thing ever. I said, and let me ask you something. This is how brilliant I was. I said, did you go to the mall to get a frame? She goes, no, I have people who do that.
Exactly. What do you think? She was in Bed Bath & Beyond looking for something cream colored. No, that did not happen. We'll be back with more Linda Richman after this.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax this Sunday with a little moment to yourself and the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Now, you not only have you lived through some ups and downs, like every 83-year-old almost would do, right? Has done in their life, but you took like grief and you made a book.
I wrote a book.
I'd Rather Laugh. And you ended up going to Canyon Ranch and lecturing people on the grief of losing a child or grief in general.
And
how did that whole book and how did that switch take place?
Well, I went to a therapist. I needed a therapist at this point. You know, as the years went on, I was going downhill. And Robin, my daughter, said to me, there's a therapist there. His name is Dan Baker. You should see him. I said, I'm not seeing another therapist. I'm done.
Right.
I'm not going. And she said, Ma,
you need to go. You need to
go. Just go.
Yeah.
So I made an appointment and I go into his office. He's wearing jeans, a cowboy hat, a cowboy shirt, boots. And I'm thinking, I'm a Jew from New York.
Right.
And I'm going to this guy. He knows
urban cowboy.
Nothing. Exactly. He knows nothing. And I went into his office and we started talking.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me a bunch of questions and I was charming.
Sure.
You know, playing the game.
Yeah,
I'm charming.
Yeah, I had him laughing, I'll bet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the biggie. And he said, can I say something to you? I said, yes. He said, I think you're full of shit. I said, excuse me?
Wow.
He said, you have covered up all your pain with humor. He said, and there are a lot of things that you should cry about that you're laughing at. He said, because it doesn't hurt to laugh. And he was my doctor. And this is how we went. I said, I don't want therapy. I've been to 4,000 therapists. He goes, no, this is not going to be regular therapy. And what we did is we went to the swimming pool and we had sessions in the pool.
Wow. And what did that do? It just made it not the stagnancy of an office?
I didn't feel like I was mentally ill.
Hmm.
Because all those years that after my son died, it was like,
dark and confusing.
Everything is dark and confusing. And then I lost my sister.
Yes.
And that was a huge hit for me. She raised me, basically.
Yeah, she was like 15 years older than you?
She was, God, almost 10.
10 years old?
Yeah.
And I loved her. She was great fun.
She was so much fun.
I knew her in Florida. And you guys were like the Bobbsey twins.
Yeah.
You were like, you know, separated never, right?
Absolutely.
And then she got sick and sadly died of cancer, correct?
Right. And I was so crazy. And I kind of love to tell this story because when someone dies, you don't know how you're going to react.
Of course.
What I did is I lived in the next building from her in Florida at this time. And every morning I went to her house and made soup. Now I am one of the worst cooks that you'll ever meet.
I can vouch for that.
And I decided that the soup was going to cure her. Mm. Until one day after she had chemo or radiation or something, she said, "I love you so much." And I said, "I love you so much." She goes, "I know, but love me less. You're killing me." She said, "Your soups are the worst soups I've ever had in my whole life."
And that's what's making me sick, and not the chemo. Right, right.
So at any rate, I had a lot of stuff in my brain.
A lot of pain. And you never really did work out the stuff with your dad, or did you with that therapist as well? The grief of losing your dad and then not being told that he had passed.
Well, he just said to me, "That's crazy. Mm. That's crazy. Your mother was ill,
right,
and didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So they made believe that he didn't exist." Because I never heard the word dad.
No, same with us. You never heard mommy in our house again. And it was almost like a terrifying word to say, right? And I remember my Aunt Minnie, who stayed with us for a little while after, who was my father's brother's Hawaiian wife. And she sometimes would set an extra place setting at the table by mistake. And it was just this horrible silent movie of her realizing it and trying to pick up the plate and move it back to the cabinet. But I noticed everything, you know? So it was like, weren't allowed to say it, but the evidence of her absence was visible everywhere. You know,
I know that.
Yeah.
I know that feeling.
Right.
You know, people would never talk about the word father, let alone having a father.
Right.
You know, until I was, God, I was getting married. Mm. So I was 18 or 19.
Oh my God, Linda, 19, you got married?
I learned I was potty trained and I got married.
Oh my God, no. What is that what everybody did then? You got out of high school, you got married?
Yeah. And I married a very nice man, but I shouldn't have gotten married.
Well, who can get married at 18? That's so young.
I wanted a baby. Mm. I wanted a baby very badly. And my firstborn was my son.
Right.
Who ultimately was killed in a car accident.
Yes, yes.
And my father had been killed
in a truck accident. Yeah.
And I thought to myself at that time, it must have been written that way.
Right.
So I'm not going to feel anything.
At all.
At all. And luckily, I became pregnant during that time and gave birth to an angel in disguise. Mm-hmm. And I put everything that I had into her, and which sent her into therapy for a lot of years.
Right, right.
You know, you can't fill a hole. With another person.
Especially another wounded sibling, you know. I mean, how old was she when Jordan passed?
She was in her 20s.
In her 20s, yeah.
You know, and she had her wounds, but I always thought of myself as the queen of depression and misery and unhappiness. Mm-hmm. And I gave it easily to everybody else.
Right.
You know, with an outside that looked happy.
Well, that's the thing, is that you're funny. You know, people think it's butter, it's coffee talk. They think of comedy. And, you know, I know that you did really profound work with the book and with all the grieving that you helped so many people that, you know, it probably was life-altering for you.
It was life-altering because people would come up to me after a lecture and say, "You've changed my life." And I go, "How?" Hmm. And they would tell me, and I go, "I did that." And there was a very famous person that I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Who came up to me who said, "I've been diagnosed as bipolar," which I didn't even know what bipolar was
right, right.
at that point. He said, and you're an important person. And I said, I am. He said, you didn't know that?
Mm.
I said, no. He said, you've made a big change in me. Whether I can hold on to it, I don't know.
Sure.
He said, but you've made a big change. And then a girl came up to me, a young girl I'm still friendly with. And we just started talking. She said, my father just died. And I looked at her and I said, I'm so sorry. I said, you know, is your father, and I'm not going to use his name.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yes. How do you know? I said, you have every mannerism of his.
Oh, it was a known father.
Famous.
Ah, the child of someone famous, right.
And we're still friends.
Oh, how about that?
And she calls
now
me.
Now I know who it is.
And yeah. She calls me at least once a month.
Right.
She called me this time, and she said, I haven't heard from you in a while. And I said, I had surgery.
Right.
And I didn't feel like talking on the phone. I'm sorry. I should have emailed you.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you can make no mistakes with me, Linda.
Ah, oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. Well, you have touched so many people. You have so many people in your life that really care about you and that you're invested. And I mean, I think it's why you're doing so well in terms of your age and your cognition and your, you know, you're fully active in loving people. You're not so active in getting up and around and moving. You know, that's something that, you know, do you think that's something that can change at 83?
Well, I'm sitting next to my physical therapist.
Yes, exactly.
Who yells at me daily.
Right.
For not getting off my, as they say in French, tuchus.
Yes, without getting off your ass
right.
To move around.
Right.
But do you think that there could be a change in that? Do you think at 83 you're kind of like, well, this is how I am and I'm not going to change it? Because like today, you didn't have the wheelchair coming in, you didn't have the canes coming in, you're doing much better than you had been.
I also, if I fell or couldn't make the steps, I wouldn't be embarrassed in front of you.
Oh, right, right.
Because
we lived together for so long.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so, but if you were having company, I would probably take the wheelchair in and I'd be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At least they knew I wouldn't fall.
More with Linda after this.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies to steal a moment for yourself before the week ahead. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
How much do you think our relationship is based on my needing a mother and you needing a child?
100%.
I do too. I think it's beshared, right?
Oh, definitely beshared. I remember you had an accident in Florida and you caught
a fishing thing. I cut off the price tag of a fishing pole and it like severed everything in my hand.
And I heard about it, and I was living in Florida, and I flew down there. When I say flew, I mean by car.
Right.
And I wasn't allowed in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I cried.
Aww.
I cried like a baby. I said, I have to see her.
Yeah.
If she, here's where my brain was. If she sees me, she's going to be all right.
Oh. And it's true.
What delusion is that?
Well, I believe it's true. How about when I had my heart attack and I called you up?
You want to tell
that story. You tell. This is a good story. I had had a heart attack on a Monday morning and went home and was feeling really bad. And I was in my art studio with Blakey and I called Linda. And I said, Linda, do you think there's any way I could have had a heart attack? And what did you say?
I said, what are the symptoms?
And I had all of them.
You had all of them. And I said, get to the hospital now.
That's right.
No matter what it is, you should be seen now.
But I was not thinking right.
Really?
And I waited another day and a half.
Yeah.
I went to a doctor on Wednesday at 4 p.m. when I had had a heart attack Monday at 9 a.m.
Yeah. Oh, I was so angry with you.
I know.
I didn't want you to die.
Me either.
You know, and like you, I couldn't make headway with you.
No, but I was like, I was 50 and I thought a heart attack has to feel more painful than this. Like my arms hurt really, really badly, but I had helped a woman get out of a car.
Mm.
And so I had helped her and it took longer and my arms were hurting and I don't know what I thought. I thought, how could this be a heart attack? How could this be? But I was very lucky because the doctor said I had like a half an hour more and that would have been that.
I couldn't imagine you not knowing it was a heart attack.
Right. I think part of me knew, but part of me was, you know, here's the stupid thing. This is what women do. Women sometimes worry about other people who aren't even in the equation. Like I was thinking, if I call the ambulance, what if there's a car accident and somebody really needs that ambulance and this isn't a heart attack after all? Then I would have caused the death of a young kid in a car accident because I wasted the ambulance. Like that's where I was, you know?
Anyone listening to this right now
right.
knows who Rosie is because that's what she'll do. She'll put her life aside so that somebody else who doesn't even exist gets care before her.
Right. That's what my brain goes through. It's like, the, you know, don't be selfish and take this when someone else could need that, you know? And I mean, it's a way that women often treat themselves last. In a family, when you're the mother, you take care of your kids first. And, you know, you don't put yourself first oftentimes, I think, when you're a mom. And I was deep into mom mode at that point, you know. Not that I've ever gotten out of mom
mode. I was
going to
say, what day did you leave?
No, I'm still in it. Yeah, but I think that our relationship has been very healing for me. And having lost my mom and to have you for, you know, the time that I missed my mother the most is when they handed me Parker. And I remember thinking, God, I wish I had my mom here to help me because you're scared. And he was preemie and he was tiny. And then not 2 days later, ding dong. Careful what you wish for.
But you just said something that he was healing for your mother. And then I get a phone call. Will you watch Rosie's son after I've lost my son?
Right, right.
I didn't care if it was Rosie O'Donnell. I didn't even know who Rosie O'Donnell was.
Right, right.
I didn't care if it was Mary Smith. You have a son and he's in, you know, in the condition that Parker was, which was a preemie.
Right.
Of course I'm going to watch him.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it made it so much more fulfilling for me to not be covered with anxiety the whole time, to not just be like, oh my God, I'm an orphan girl without a mom. How am I going to do this? You know, what do I do if he wakes up in the middle of the night and he's vomiting and like you start to panic with your first baby. You don't realize, you know, I don't know if you remember, but he fell off the couch. You know, the couch was very low. It was
one of those,
like the couch is here. You need four people to help you get up.
Right.
But he rolled off the couch, and I was afraid that he hit his head on the wooden leg, but he didn't because it was under the couch. So, but I called the doctor and I was like panicking, hyperventilating. My son fell off the couch. How high is the couch? About three, 2.5 feet, 2.5 feet. Okay, Miss O'Donnell, you've just survived your son's first fall.
Right.
I was like, and what do I do? Do I bring him into urgent care? What do I do? They're like, you do nothing. Is he crying? And no, he's fine. He's fine. And so you learn, you know, but it, you need to have those maternal figures in your life, especially when you lost one so young that, you know, you don't always know where and when you're going to need a mother if you've never had the chance to have one.
And I always felt I didn't have a mother.
So interesting. Right, because she was not really able to care for you. She wasn't in her right mind.
I had a sister.
Yes.
Who I made into my mother. Mm-hmm. And after my sister passed away, I used to think I killed her.
Oh, Linda.
I had a lot of therapy. I'm okay. I know that that's not real. At the moment, I thought I put so much pressure on her all her life that I probably killed her.
No.
But I went into therapy.
Yeah. And it helped.
Yeah, swimming helped.
A lot. Now, you love swimming, but you don't do it that much.
No.
Why?
The water's too cold.
Yeah. Well, Robin has a heated pool now.
Now she does, but it's not. Is it working?
It's working. And it's hot.
Well, then it's new.
Okay.
Because there wasn't a pool there.
Right.
They built a pool.
Yeah.
Don't I sound like I'm rich and famous?
You kind of are.
I kind of.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Yes. Come on. So your relationship with Robin is one of the most beautiful mother-daughter relationships that I know of.
Thank you.
Would you say that too? I mean,
I'm crying.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that you are so involved and so obviously in love with each other. You care about each other. You're in each other's lives on a daily, minute-by-minute basis. We have had this group text since the beginning of COVID that Robin set up. And we have taken it all the way through till now when COVID is pretty much done, although my nanny just had it, that we talk on these group texts 3 or 4 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know, Robin calls you, what, 10 times a day?
At least four. Yeah. At least four.
And you had to work on it too, don't you think? It didn't just come naturally.
I think tragedy brought us together.
What do you think are the ingredients to a good relationship with your adult daughter? Like, so many of my friends have problems with their moms in their 80s that it's, you know, and Robin has the patience of a saint. I give her that. She surely does. And she takes care of you like a concierge at the best hotel in the country.
You can't get better than her.
Right.
Sometimes it's very annoying.
Yeah, to you.
To me.
Yeah.
But I know where it's coming from. So I have to be patient because she's hurting. I'm not hurting from it.
Right.
You know, I accept what she's giving and I try and she's going to listen to this and never talk to me again.
I hardly.
I try not to make her part of my mental illness,
mm-hmm.
which is I don't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
This hurts. That hurts. I mean, I had a heart attack and I had just come out to California. This is years ago. And I called her. I was in a motel for some reason because I usually stayed with her. And I called her. I first called 911. I said, I'm having a heart attack. I need an ambulance. That's how I got on the
phone. That's how you did it.
Yeah. And then I called Robin. I said, listen, I'm having a heart attack and I'm going to St. John's is where I was near. And she said, I'm coming to get you. I said, no, you are not to come and get me. An ambulance is coming to get me.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the hospital and as luck would have it, the doctor who operated on Mother Teresa was the visiting doctor that day at the hospital.
Okay. I have to explain to people. Linda Richmond is all about the doctors, where they go to school, yep. where they studied, how were their grades? Who else do you treat? Do you treat anyone that I'm aware of? Is it someone famous that I would like? And how about this? The weirdest thing about Linda Richmond, if you say any celebrity dead or alive, like Soupy Sales, Linda will say, you know, his daughter's cardiologist was my uncle's neighbor.
That's right.
Like, you know the most absurd facts about whose doctor is connected to who.
I do.
And you had a Mother Teresa doctor there for your heart attack.
So when I woke up, they said, you know who operated on you? Mother Teresa's doctor. And I went, he's not even Jewish.
No, not even. There's some interesting books about her that said that her faith was kind of diminished at the end of her life. And she wrote some interesting diary entries about whether or not she believed in God towards the end. It's very, very two fascinating books I read. One about a postulate who was in her service in the, what is it called? The Sisters of Charity.
You're asking me.
I don't know. But anyway, it was very fascinating books, very fascinating, which brings us back to Barbra Streisand. I know you listened to it like I did, right? I started out reading it and I heard everyone saying, you have to listen to it. So I listened to it and it was like a warm blanket over me. You know, I had to find myself sitting and somewhere in the sun with the headphones on, because it would almost make me like feel so comforted that I'd go to sleep with her voice in my head. You know what I mean?
But Rosie, let me just ask you this question.
Go.
Was your name ever mentioned in the book?
No, was not.
Mine was.
All right, listen, bitch. All right, right now. Let's throw down, Linda. I don't care that I got 20 years on you.
I know.
No, I mean, listen, for what she was and is to me in my life and how she was and is to me now is more than I ever could have expected. The fact that she was so welcoming and so understanding and so genuinely loving of this, you know, person who wouldn't stop crying when she looked at her. I mean, what must that feel like? Because we're not the only ones, Linda. There are millions of us. Everyone could feel the power of that voice and that talent and her acting and her directing. And she's like a powerhouse, a force of life that entertainment and artistically, I don't think has been matched in our generation.
Not in our generation at all. But a thought just came to my mind.
What's that?
And that's when Rosie was living in Florida. I was living in Florida. And Rosie, I don't know who called who or what. I think it was you calling me. You said, you're not going to believe this. Mm-hmm. Barbra Streisand asked if she could stay in my house.
Yes.
Because she didn't like the hotel.
The hotel, yes.
That she was at. I said, oh my God. So what's going on in your house? She said, I'm redecorating the whole thing today.
No, I called the people who helped me clean and I said, flowers in every room, clean everything, come on. And we got a new toaster because the toaster was not good. And she left me little post-it notes around my house in my bedroom. And I kept them all. I have everything she's ever sent me, given me, written to me, I have in a special box. And I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to, you know, Bobby Pierce, my friend, Bobby, you love Bobby. He's a great guy. He always says to me, you know, why don't you keep your Emmys? Why don't you keep your, and I had said, if my kids want that as a remembrance of me, I think I've failed in some way, right? If all they want is my career stuff, like my achievements outside of the family. So I thought like a box of these intimate, meaningful letters from my pretend mother in my brain, you know, that would mean more to my children when I'm gone than ever a statue could, you know. But
my daughter wants cash.
I think she did all right. Don't worry about Robin.
I don't.
Well, Linda, this has been really fun. This is all fun. It is. We're done.
I can't believe the whole thing.
You did it successfully. Now, what do you have to promote? Anything? Turning 83.
Turning 83.
Yes.
We're going to have a little party at Robin's, and I'm going to be smiling and laughing and hoping I get really nice presents.
Honey, whatever you need, I got for you.
Of course you do.
All right.
Why do you think I dropped it?
Come
just
on.
Now?
I love you very much.
Thank you
for doing my podcast.
I love you, Ro.
All right. Linda Richman, ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. We'll be back after this. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Linda Richman is one of a kind, and I love her to death, and I hope that you liked it. Next week on Onward will be just me, Rosie O'Donnell. Just me talking. Let's see how that goes. Peace out, everybody.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax this Sunday with a little moment to yourself and the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a one-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give Love and Logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.